You are listening to Kubernetes Bytes, a podcast bringing you the latest from the world of cloud-native data management. My name is Ryan Wallner, and I'm joined by Bhavin Shah, coming to you from Boston, Massachusetts. We'll be sharing our thoughts on recent cloud-native news and talking to industry experts about their experiences and challenges managing the wealth of data in today's cloud-native ecosystem. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. We're coming to you from Boston, Massachusetts. Today is June 8th, 2023. Hope everyone is doing well and staying safe. Let's dive into it. June 8th, my mother's birthday. Mom, if you're listening, happy birthday.
I know. Our very first listener?
Probably not, though. Let's be honest. anyway, yeah, June 8th. How's it going, Bhavin?
I'm doing good. I think after we recorded the last pod, we were both at Red Hat Summit, so we got to meet in person, get some noodles.
That's right.
Yeah. So
this was a good time.
I know. That was a fun week, like a busy week, but a fun week. Just to meet everyone again. So
Red Hat Summit. I haven't been to a conference in Boston in quite some time. It was nice to just kind of re-immerse myself and see everybody. I think Red Hat Summit was really great for me, at least. Mm-hmm. I think the conversations, the people, and everything was, I was pleasantly surprised. But I guess maybe because it's, when it's your local city, I don't know, maybe you have a different thought about it, but it was good.
No, it was a good conference, like a lot of good conversations around OpenShift, right? One thing that I stayed back with me is a guy stopping by the Portworx booth and saying like, why is everybody trying to sell me Ansible? He's like, I only set up my servers once and that's it. I was like, okay, we don't do anything with Ansible, but I won't sell you Ansible.
Well, to be fair, he's the outlier there. If he only set up his servers once, never touch them again.
Yeah,
I don't know who you are, but that's probably a bad idea.
Maybe you need some Ansible.
Yeah, or anything else, really. It sounds like. No, a lot of Ansible.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense. The event-driven stuff is pretty cool. I really enjoyed kind of digging into that after the show because I didn't know much about it. I actually got asked today, like, by someone, it was like, hey, is that kind of like Lambda for Ansible? And I was like, you know, it's not a terrible analogy, actually. pretty different, but yeah. You know, I like that analogy, like conceptually, I should say.
Yeah, people already know what those terms mean, so yeah, it's easy to make that connection.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's if you're in the East Coast at all, hopefully you're inside now, out of the smoke from Canada. You know, everyone up there in the wilderness is safe, but you know, we're inside, we're safe here, and we have a really cool show for you today. We have Shelly and Craig from Armo, but before we get them on the show and introduce them, we're going to dive into some cloud-native news. Bhavin, why don't you go first? We'll be right back after this.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Nom nom. And we're back.
Yeah, I can start with some Red Hat Summit news, right? A couple of announcements that caught my eye or I wanted to share were around advanced cluster security. So Red Hat ACS, that used to be a thing that customers can buy on-prem, and that came from the StackRox acquisition that they did maybe 2 years back at this point. They open sourced the whole thing and offer it as a solution. What they announced right now was a managed service where they have a SaaS-based solution for security or for cluster security, where you can connect not just your Red Hat OpenShift clusters, but also your GKE, EKS, AKS clusters and deal with vulnerability management and network security and configuration management and threat detection and those kinds of use cases. Only gotcha is it's in limited availability. But again, I like where this is going, like a managed service for my security tools. Like I don't have to manage it on each cluster. I can just connect my clusters and just monitor, or monitor my entire estate from one single dashboard. So I don't know.
Yeah, looks really cool stuff. Obviously, insecurity, very appropriate for today's topic. But you know, I was trying to figure out, we've gotten, as an entire ecosystem, or market, I guess.
Yeah.
I see that there's a lot of companies announcing stuff that doesn't exist, and I don't know how I feel about it, right? Yeah. And my day job, like, we're guilty, right? Like, I'm not saying I don't do that, or the, you know, represent someone who doesn't do that, but I don't know how I feel about that. Like, can I just announce something, just make it
be? I know. Or, like, do what, like, maybe other companies did, right, in the past, where they announced something, and maybe in a month, things were real. Now,
I don't know. I have to look in historically if this has always been a thing for release and like networking and kind of marketing. But I don't know. Maybe it bothers me now. If it was always a thing, it's a new thing that bothers me that grinds my gears. Nice. Grinds my gears episode. Anyway, moving on to your next one.
I agree. I think it's frustrating to like hear about something and not see that thing become a reality for 6 to 9 months. That's definitely frustrating. So
but I'm it's not even just the tech industry. Like, motorcycles, for instance. The only reason I picked that one is because I read a lot about them. But all the time, it's like, it's April in 2023. Well, it was.
Yeah, at some point,
And they're announcing 2024 models, right? Or cars. Cars do the same thing. And I'm just like, I don't get it. I don't know. I probably just need to be schooled on why that is a thing. But anyway,
I read a VC article around it, right? Like, there is this philosophy that you sell first and then you build it. Okay. I think more and more people are going there. Like, yeah, make sure somebody's ready to buy what you want to build.
it's announced and then you wait for that. And then by the time you get it, the next one is, when do you stop?
I know. I think I was listening to another podcast, a non-tech podcast, Acquired, if people haven't listened to it. But what they covered like Lockheed Martin for like 3 hours and how they do government contracts. And one thing that they raised was these defense companies bid for contracts. And once they actually have that contract, that's when they start ramping up staff and like figuring out what to build. So I think that's maybe the direction.
Because the cycles are so much longer.
Yeah. So obviously we shouldn't do that. Like not... But we have to find a balance.
That's bad for humankind. Mm-hmm. Throwing you off topic.
Going back to news. The second announcement from Red Hat Summit, they announced like a developer hub portal or Red Hat Developer Hub, which is based on the open source Backstage project. I know Backstage is super popular. This is just Red Hat's flavor of it with the same plugins that work with Backstage can now work with Red Hat Developer Hub. I guess Ryan will be pissed because it's going to be early access in June and then GA sometime later in 2023.
It really can't be because it's everything that comes out is before it's actually out.
So no, that was another project that came out. And then the third one was Red Hat released their Podman Desktop 1.0, which is a GUI based client for creating, deploying, managing containers, and it's available as a Windows, Linux, or Mac client. After reading this article, I downloaded it. And I didn't even know I had a container image taking up 7 gigs of storage. Obviously, that shouldn't be the case. Yeah, on my laptop, I was like, okay, I need to delete that. So just if you want to identify if you have some older container images running on your laptop, just download it from podman-desktop.io. So Podman is cool. I think that covers the Red Hat part of my news. I wanted to cover like funding rounds and new companies that I have heard about. So Alcyon, I think Alcyon, again, we knew of Alcyon existing as a company, but we didn't really know what they were trying to do. Alcyon was founded by, I think, the Kasten co-founders the Kasten co-founder and the chief product officer. It came out of stealth last week or a couple of weeks back, announcing like an $8 million in seed funding. And their one-liner is it's an AI-forward security heavy take on backup. And they announced like they're starting with Microsoft Office 365. So trying to protect that suite of products first, and then they'll go and take care of everything else. But yeah, I think Neeraj and Vaibhav are going back to the backup roots and building something that's AI forward and security heavy.
Yeah, I love to see it. And congrats to Neeraj and everyone.
Yeah. And then talking about funding rounds, right? MindsDB, another interesting AI-based database company, some combination of keywords or buzzwords there. They basically announced that they have a seed funding round, which basically is an extension of their seed round that they did in February. So now between just pre-seed and seed, like that early in the cycle, they have raised $50 million. And basically they want to equip developers to rapidly ship AI and machine learning applications. So again, that's the one-liner. Go ahead and look it up and what the company actually does. But look pretty cool. They have a client where you can try out their database and try out their offering. They do have a SaaS solution. So, but interesting, like get these buzzwords in, you get 50 million in pre-seed and seed. Right? and then finally, I think, yeah, that easy. Like talking about AI, one last thing, and then I'm done. Teleport, right? I know we have some friends over at Teleport, but they announced something called as Teleport Assist, which is their new GPT-4 based or GPT-4 powered DevOps assistant. It is still experimental, so they still have that disclosure or condition asterisk mark, like use caution, validate all outputs, but it helps you troubleshoot common issues. So it runs against your Kubernetes clusters. It shows you the commands that it generates to find certain information. And then when you tell it to run that command, it goes and like runs it against your cluster and gives you information about your cluster. So it maybe speeds up your troubleshooting cycles or root cause analysis and helps you collect information about your infrastructure and maybe even troubleshoot in the future.
Or maybe it'll make you chase rabbits and turtles.
Yeah.
True. Who knows? We see a lot of that. I mean, it's really exciting. I know we're talking to a few different companies that hopefully we'll have on the show and things like that about this space. And it's exciting. I think it certainly is. So that's really cool to see, especially since it's still pretty early. You know, it's not like this came out as you know, that long ago. So it's cool to see people taking advantage of companies taking advantage of it. And I plan on definitely trying to use it more now that it's out there.
I know.
Yeah, that's just my take on it.
But yeah, that's it from me, from the news that I had.
Nice. All right, go to my news here. The first one I have is about Yugabyte 2.18. I almost said 1.8, 2.18. They added multi-region Kubernetes support, which is you know, something that we often talk about in the sort of persistent space, database space. It's something we've been seeing as interest for years now, I would say.
Yeah.
And more kind of technology and individual databases start supporting it. I think, you know, as people actually start to use multi-cloud and hybrid cloud, and for a while it felt like we talked about it, but didn't see it that much in reality. It's cool to see stuff like this.
Yeah.
The next article is a article about why you need the Kubernetes bill of materials. We covered SBOMs on the show, even IBOMs. I don't think we've talked a lot about IBOMs, but pretty much put a letter in front of BOM.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably a thing. You know, this is kind of in conjunction with the Kubernetes Security Operations Center and the Kubernetes bill of materials and everything. Yeah. So anyway, really cool article about kind of breaking down why you need one, right? We've talked about it and maybe you're not familiar with it, and I'm not and haven't been until, you know, researching this. Just a good article about digging in about what it's actually doing, looking for, kind of why you want to use it. So go check that out. Nice. The other one is Microsoft, the end of May, introduced Azure Linux for its Kubernetes service. So much like the Amazon Linux for EKS, this is Azure's flavor and its own distro of Linux for its AKS service. For better or for worse, you know, a lot of times initial releases of these things can have hiccups, you know, things you'd normally expect to work don't. But I haven't personally tried it. I'm sure it's really cool. But anyway, this article goes into in depth of sort of what it is and why, that kind of thing, in terms of like, you know, they built it to make node provisioning and boot times faster and things like that. So there's obviously positives. I'm not trying to be a pessimist here. I think that's all I'm going to cover for today. We have Shali Rosen and Craig Box. Shali is the CEO and co-founder of Armo. And Craig Box is the VP of Open Source and Community at Armo. And they're going to come talk to us about all things sort of security, open source, what's changing in the DevOps roles, how things are shifting, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm interested in talking to Craig, right? Because I listened to the Google Kubernetes podcast for a while. And then after he left and joined Armo, I was like, okay. But yeah, I've heard him talk a lot and explain a lot of concepts over the years. So I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get him on the show. Hello and welcome to Kubernetes Bytes, Shali and Craig. It's great to have you here. I won't do your intros. Why don't you introduce yourselves? Shali, why don't you go first?
Hey, well, thank you for having me. Shaoli Wozan, CEO and one of the co-founders, together with Ben, of Armor, the company behind CubeScape. CubeScape is an open source security tool for Kubernetes that has been gaining a lot of traction. Happy to be here. I'm an engineer by profession, kind of like during my course of time, moved into the business side, but still like, you know, contemplating what I like better, presenting or sure. Linux command line.
Thanks. Craig, why don't you go next?
Hi, I'm Shaoli's wingman. I'm the goose to his maverick. Is that the right thing to say?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I work as work for Shaoli as the VP of open source and community in Armor. I joined about 6 months ago, and I came off 8.5 years at Google, which is pretty much correlated with the existence of Kubernetes. They were just starting to work on the project just when I joined.
Absolutely. So, Shaoli, maybe why don't we start with a little bit of, you know, the story behind Armor. You said you're an engineer, you're doing something different now. Give us and our listeners a bit more about, you know, what you're up to and what the company's all about.
Definitely. Well, you know, the company today, what we're doing is we provide an Armor platform, which is a Kubernetes security platform based on an open source project that we are running and maintaining. The way we got there is, you know, my co-founders, they're like, you know, super security experts. We came up with the security runtime idea that we wanted to do for Kubernetes, started to pitch it around, speak with, you know, the way it works is like, you're a security expert, you sell security, you speak with CISOs. And we had so many discussions with CISOs where every time, like the second sentence is, well, let me get my DevOps team involved, you know. It's kind of like, that was kind of like always the case. And eventually we said, well, you know, let's leave the CISOs aside. If everybody is sending us to the DevOps, you know, let's go directly to the DevOps. And I think that was a very key, I would say, point in the life of Armor, where we said, okay, what will drive that? You know, how do we get to DevOps? And we made three decisions back then. One is, you know, DevOps, they would like different problems solved than security. They do care about security. With the risk of blubbering a little bit, I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that DevOps don't care about security. I don't think that's true. Oh, yeah. I think DevOps do care about security.
But they, CISOs don't.
Like security.
CISOs go to say, hey, my DevOps team care about security.
Yeah. Sometimes I say that, you know, DevOps, they care about security. They don't care about security people. Okay, they don't care about CISOs, for lack of a better term. But generally speaking, they do care about security. They see it as an engineering, as a technology problem. And it was very refreshing, you know, to actually, you know, be able to speak with people on the level of engineering. So we decided that we will start working more and more on DevOps problem, which is more around, you know, posture, you know, reducing the amount of work, automating things around security. That was the main driver. The second thing is, if you work with DevOps, we're not going to sell to them in, you know, conferences and dinner tables and golf courts. It's going to be, you know, over the air. They're going to need to be able to download, work with it, start working with it, fill it up, and then go forward. And the last point was open source. We understood that you need to be transparent, especially as you put things inside the cluster. You need to be very, very transparent. Transparency is appreciated. And we decided to go forward with that. And we launched CubeScape, which was our attempt at doing that. It gained a lot of success. I couldn't imagine that the success that it will be as much as it actually did. And that's, you know, that's actually, I think, when Craig, you...
So a long, long time ago, I used to talk to people on podcast about Kubernetes. And one of the things I would do was look and see what was happening in the industry. I'm very closely connected to what's going on. And that was when I first noticed Armor, was when CubeScape was published. It was around about 3 or 4 weeks after the NSA had published their first version of the Kubernetes hardening guidelines. And here comes a tool which basically says, here's how to validate whether or not your clusters, your environments, your workloads, and so on, are in line with the guidance that they've published. And I thought, that's really interesting. First of all, it's a really good problem to be solving. And second, it shows a startup that's agile and is able to move very quickly and respond to something and bring out a tool. And I think that was good timing, obviously, in terms of popularity. I was able to pick up on this thing, which was in the news at the time. and deliver something super valuable very quickly. And that really is the start of the KubeCape story.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't tell you how many times, you know, I've been working at a company or on a platform team, even before it was called platform engineering, right? Where, you know, the security team was just this team that you had to like get permission to do stuff, right?
All exceptions.
And so the DevOps, you know, teams, whatever, the engineers used to, you know, use that team as sort of, well, let me try to, you know, use that team to allow me to do something, which meant really the DevOps team was trying to do the minimum amount to get the okay, right? So I like this shift that we're seeing and that Armo is really behind as well, right? Moving, you know, the importance of everything to the DevOps team and it starts there. So I guess, you know, to dig in on the open source piece a little bit, you know, how would you say that, you know, it really changed the role of, you know, the Kubernetes admins or cloud native, you know, engineers or DevOps engineers?
I'd almost flip it the other way around and say that the availability of this kind of tooling delegates control to lower in the org chart than ever before. People are able to call APIs to get things deployed, whereas previously you'd have to ask someone with a budget to go and order you a server. And so that same thing becomes true of security. Like you say, these people are able to deploy things, have them come up, come down, auto scale. They're not even necessarily deploying themselves. They're setting instructions for a machine to do that. And then that, now the flexibility we have with all of these tools and systems like Kubernetes requires a new model of thinking. First of all, there's sort of an assumption everything will be open source these days. There is very little closed source software remaining, even software that is proprietary. There is sort of an assumption that you as an end user, especially at a certain scale, you're going to be able to get access to the source code. So even if you're running Windows, you're a big commercial user, you can go to Microsoft and go into a deep dark room in the basement somewhere and get out the loop and look at the lines of source and do all that. But it's great to know with open source that someone else has done that for you. And pretty much everything since Linux, since definitely in the Kubernetes ecosystem, is almost all open source these days. And that means someone else can do the auditing and you can trust that they've done work there that you don't have to do. And so the same is true as we need this sort of match of works with the environment people are used to today, is open source because there's an expectation. And that's, I should point out, that's not necessarily true in security software. Like strangely enough for this world, this environment where people are still dealing with looking at things and finding security flaws and so on, the software that drives that is still largely closed and proprietary to some degree. It is to me a bit of a surprise that the Armo were one of the first teams to come along and say, all right, well, we're going to build this thing not just as sort of like we do 90% of our stuff closed source and here's a little thing we're throwing out to the cloud native community, but it's like we're going to pitch our business into that. And that was why it made sense to bring someone like me on, because we're going to adopt to the tools DevOps people are using and the business model in the way that makes sense that they are used to working with and apply security to that DevOps mindset.
Gotcha. So, Greg, I think you mentioned one important thing, right? Like how now DevOps admins don't have to wait for that person with security budget or budget to do things. Inside, if you look inside an organization, right, security has become everybody's responsibility, or it should be. But like, do you really see that happening when you talk to people in the community with your background or whenever you're talking to Armo customers, prospects or existing customers? Like who is responsible for securing apps or infrastructure, and how do you enable everyone to do their job? Like, are developers doing it? Are DevOps admins doing it? Who's the one who's actually on the hook for these things?
Every vendor worth their salt publishes an annual security report of some description. And we've done one at open source recently, but there was one which came out, and it may have been Red Hat's, and I'm sorry if it wasn't. But every year they basically say, who do you think in your organization is responsible for security? And if we assume that there's like a 5% margin of error, it was really interesting because effectively there were five different options. And this year there were 20% each. There was one that was 28, one that was 18 or whatever. But effectively security, 20%, developers, 20%, DevOps, 20%, someone, IT, for example. So whoever actually is responsible in any particular organization, it's a pretty even split between who people think is responsible. And I'll let Shirley talk more to how we talk to our customers about this.
Sure.
Yeah, I think this is something that I see as well. The clear thing that we do see, and I would say this is more prominent than the title specifically, is the fact that security responsibility is being pushed down. That is happening across companies, whether it is, you know, whether the title of the person is security or DevOps. We see more and more security type titles moving from the typical security team to the engineering team. So you're starting to see titles like security engineer, security architect, cloud architect, DevSecOps. Of course, everybody's talking about it. If you look at the like the CubeScape user base and the Armor platform user base, what we see is that somewhere around 60% of the titles are DevOps type titles, and about 30% of them have, like the other 30% will have some security notion in it. It can be DevSecOps, security engineers, all of those guys that I've mentioned, but these are usually, all of them are usually within the engineering team. It's rarely that we face like the risk audit team or the CISO. Usually when we get to CISOs, it's for them to evaluate the security of our solution, not to operate it.
There's an old Seinfeld joke that says people are more scared of public speaking than death. And he's talking about the fact that they would rather be giving the eulogy at their own funeral than be the one in the casket. And the same thing is sort of true there in terms of responsibility. I think the modern equivalent of that is I'm afraid that the thing I work on will end up on the front page of the newspaper for being exploited to some degree. And it used to be I would develop something and I only have like a point where it stops being my responsibility. And then another team audits it, another team deploys it, another team secures it and deploys that software to production. And then if it broke, I can point at all these other people and say, oh, well, it was their problem. Whereas now, me as a quote-unquote DevOps person, or whatever you want to call them, like I am developing a thing and I'm pushing it very quickly, many times a day in some cases, we're deploying this stuff. So ultimately, the responsibility, and of course, we should all work blamelessly and so on in terms of the processes that get to this point, but the actions that a lower in the organization person can take can lead to that thing. And so that is part of the reason we see it being pushed down, is that it needs to be thought about in the work that a lot more people do than in the old days where the security team were gatekeepers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what we've seen too on the show, like talking with various guests, is, you know, we see these teams also kind of building platform teams, DevOps teams, but then the roles that is DevSecOps or security teams are kind of becoming embedded within those teams, right? And so it's kind of a shared responsibility, shared communication a lot. You know, a lot of what's been talking about with platform engineering has been deeper, you know, open lines of communication, which is, I think, is a great thing. And I think it speaks to, you know, some of these responsibilities kind of now becoming more embedded. And I think that, you know, the report that you mentioned, we'll put a link for it for everybody in the show notes, your Kubernetes open source security one, which is a good kind of lead into maybe what are the key challenges? Maybe it came up in the survey, maybe it didn't, but what are the key challenges that, you know, you're seeing in sort of these DevOps environments to, you know, for those teams to overcome? You know, are there glaring, obvious ones that are clearly a trend, or, you know, what does that look like?
I would say one of the prominent or most popular challenges that we see that come from our customers, but also in the survey, is, you know, first and foremost, the complexity of the environment, the complexity of Kubernetes.
Yep.
It's not just a security problem, to be honest. It's just like it's a complexity problem just as it is, but it makes it very hard for security as well. The number of alerts and the number of potential misconfigurations and threats in your environment is something that is kind of like continuing to grow in number and in magnitudes. And it is becoming like this endless chase. You know, you try to fix things, but you never know that you are done. Like it's almost like chasing your tail. And I think that's one of the most, relevant and the most prevalent thing that we are hearing, most common thing we're hearing.
Misconfigurations has been something, I think, of a resounding, a repeating sort of theme that we've heard as well. So where do these misconfigurations, like, where do they come from? Like, is it people doing it? Is it process? Is it tools? Like, what
all of the above. Like, it is hard to know how to configure all of these knobs. The more things, the more controls we give to people, the things they can do that they couldn't do before. And I think, first of all, it's important to note that this enables things. This complexity is needed. It enables people to do things that there was no way they could do before. Sure. But it also means that it becomes far more complex. And the solution, as we see it at least, is let's put machines on these things. Like, it's really hard as someone who observes the industry and is following along with secure software supply chain and all this future looking stuff to actually go back and talk to people, and that they say, actually, I don't know how to do the simple stuff. I don't have the meat and potatoes, mm-hmm. if you will, down of how do I make sure that I can deploy software well. And deploying yep. software is one thing. You look at all the startups and companies around feature flags and deployment and so on. Like the action of deploying a new piece of software is difficult, but the action of getting the configuration of that causes more outages than the action deploying the software itself. And we think the same is true of configurations. Like we hear a lot of people who are worried about what happens if a state attacks me, but that's far less likely in most situations for most people than a well-meaning engineer does the wrong thing because they didn't have guardrails set up to stop them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. I think I would like to go back to the point Shali made in the previous question, right, about security being pushed down and now being everybody's responsibility. Like even in the ecosystem, we keep hearing the term shift left and how we want to empower more developers. Like how has the software development lifecycle changed? Like how are developers integrating this security mindset as they are writing code and taking it through from their like staging and test dev and those kinds of environments and eventually into production? How has that changed?
Well, first of all, not all of them have done that.
Okay.
that's what you're
starting point. But what we see more and more is we see the embedment of security information and security mm-hmm. checks right within writing code. You know, Snyk has done a very good job in that at enabling developers. And then as it pushed into registries, and you need to correlate it with like configurations and images, mm-hmm. and many of the images are not under your control. You download them from third parties. We see Git actions being used quite a bit in order to continuously check registries as they go forward. What I see as the next step of that is actually bringing data back from runtime, like bringing data from the right side to the left side mm-hmm. to help you do that even better. Because one of the biggest things that you see is, you know, alerts or configurations or issues that you find that might not actually be relevant for you. So many of the artifacts that are, you know, bundled into the different things that we are doing are not really taking impact. And these are, and we see, I think that that's going to be a lot of what's going to come in the next few years.
And so do we see developers using tools like KubeScape to identify vulnerabilities or things that can, or misconfigurations or things can be fixed earlier in the life cycle? Or do you see that they're trying to follow the best practices, but eventually when it gets to that DevSecOps persona is when like things are getting fixed? Like when are people catching vulnerabilities?
The earlier we catch them, the earlier the developer catches them, the less likely it is that we were to know there was a problem. Like that's wonderful. Yep. If we say there's no outage and there was no problem that made it to production and so on. That is why we've put a lot of effort into shifting shifting KubeScape left, if you will. So mm-hmm. being able to run it in CI pipelines, being able to run it as an IDE plugin and so on. The idea of saying here are the Kubernetes specific configurations, which are effectively a DSL of themselves that you have to worry about. Say, if I deploy this thing, first of all, am I doing something stupid? Am I shooting myself in the foot by saying that there's no security context set or that the thing is allowed to run as root when it shouldn't be?
Yeah.
And then having context to say, well, my organization wants to set policies to allow things that say, I will create a framework that says, you are allowed to use this setting, but only under these circumstances, or that necessarily needs to get a second set of approval for something. Like just bringing that attention to people. If people do things well, then they're never going to have outages and we're never going to see them by the time you get to doing cluster scans and so on. So it is useful, but it also makes it hard to tell, like to say the IT admin who never gets any thanks because there's never any outages or anything. You have no idea how much effort they're going to behind the scenes.
Yep.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
The custom framework part is something that we see as probably the most common use case for KubeScape, in the mm-hmm. sense of, you know, if you're a developer and you are in the IDE and you're running your checks, you don't know if it's okay or not. You know, KubeScape run, I don't know, something like 200 or more checks on your YAML, but you're never going to be able to deal with that.
Yeah.
So the most, you know, I would say common use case that we're seeing is that the DevOps engineer or the DevOps team, they're creating these boundaries, right? What they allow or what they would like you to check or not to check. they create this limited framework, which is much smaller than like the 200 controllers, say, yeah, we don't want you to put privileged workloads into our environment, or, you know, please make sure that you put CPU limits. That these are the easy stuff. And they create those type of frameworks, and these are running in the CI/CD for in the IDEs. And then, you know, the developers, they can work based on that, which is much more manageable than now running, you know, all the different checks. So yeah. Some of it does get into production.
And one thing we've heard quite consistently as well is sort of this idea of a skills gap, because let's say that there's in every organization there's a few Kubernetes unicorns who know everything from DevOps, the full stack, security, yeah, everything else. As we shift more and more things to, you know, left or to the developer or DevOps team, are we sort of setting us up for increasing that sort of challenge, or is it up to us or you to create the tools to make it easy? I guess it's more of a culture problem, but, you know, that's something we've continued to hear in the whole context of Kubernetes and complexity, and now, you know, moving security this way.
I am led to believe that as developers, we now simply go to a text box on the website and type in, write me a program, and then the machine writes the program for us, and all security is handled. We don't have to worry.
Yeah, the most super secure way.
It's interesting to see where the Kubernetes project has landed with this. I remember Joe Bader at one point was describing YAML as being assembly language, and it's so true if you look at it. The idea of Kubernetes was that people would build higher level abstractions on top of it and hide things away. And you can, as a platform team, people all want a platform. They all want their own custom platform. There are tools like Knative and so on that make it easy to run various abstractions. But ultimately, we see a lot of people who are running things on top of Kubernetes because they've decided that that is the abstraction level they're comfortable with. Heroku was too high level. Linux is too low level. Something like Kubernetes in the middle is good. And that does make for a skills gap, because people have to think now about a lower level framework than previously they would have if they were writing against something like Heroku. And you can get the benefits of that too. You can say, well, I worried now at a slightly lower concern, but I can pack things into fewer machines and do things they didn't have the control. I don't need to pay my vendor as much to cover that. What is the impact of that on security? Well, hopefully these images provide a boundary that you're able to look at yourself and say, all right, I'm going to trust these particular vendors. I'm going to check vulnerabilities on these and so forth. But you see a little bit more into it. You may not have access to the vendor's runtime information if you were running on one of those high-level services. So I don't think that there's real security impact in terms of what tooling people are choosing to use, but it's interesting to see that over the time that we've been building this thing out as a community, that this is a level that people have said that they're comfortable with. And I think that, joking aside about your chat GPTs and so on, it is more when you have a paradigm shift that you end up with a new level that people are going to settle at. And I don't think anything's going to come along and replace Kubernetes in this space, but I think some other space will come along and replace Kubernetes as to how we deploy software on servers. Maybe we move away from servers and we move to a clustered model of watches we're all wearing or so on. That's all.
Nice. I would like to see that, I guess. I know we have referred to KubeScape a lot in this recording already. I know you guys recently donated KubeScape to CNCF as a sandbox project, maybe. So how has things changed after the donation of the project? And I know there are exciting features like the IDE integration and the maybe even the GitHub Actions integration. Like, how do you see people using that? And can you talk about any interesting features that we missed?
I'll let Shirley talk a little bit to the decision behind why that came about, and then I can talk about how we implemented it and what that means.
Yeah. So first, we thought a lot about it. Okay, it's not an easy decision, and always, you know, thinking about, yeah, you know, will the benefits outweigh the concerns, and you never know, and then you jump into it. You know, eventually the reason we decided to do it is because we believed that the CNCF is a good place to create a project and to show that we have the right cadence and the right protocols within the project. We also wanted to learn. We also wanted to bring more of the community in. And I think that's one of the first things that this drove us into CNCF. Another thing is we saw more and more, you know, stronger, bigger companies starting to use KubeScape. Yeah. And these companies were looking for a, like, I don't want to say a certification, but mm-hmm. some kind of credibility, some kind of a sign off that, yeah. you know, we are following the right protocols. And they started to look and ask us more and more about it. And the CNCF provides us with a good framework in order to do that.
I had a look at the CNCF's webpage before. And as of time of writing, and if I remember correctly, there are 20 graduated projects and 38 incubating projects. So yeah. it's a, like Shirley says, it's a great shorthand for businesses to say, hey, they meet all of these requirements, and we know that there's good governance, and we know that the project is likely to survive longer than the people who work on it. But that said, you can't just throw a project at the CNCF and assume that it's going to make change. That's something you have to drive yourself. You still have to put in all the work. And so we are doing that. We're putting in all the work. We have taken the CubeScape engine and separated it out from the Armu platform enterprise product. And so there's still work that we're doing there to make sure that those things continue to be useful, but to continue with the vendor neutrality situation the CNCF have, is CubeScape is a thing that people can use completely disconnected if they're not running Armu in any sense. And now we're looking at what DevOps people need and what more things we can build. So on some sense, we've got the Armu team who are saying, all right, well, our customers need this and these are ways we can do integrations. And on the other hand, we have what is useful to have in a product in this space. This is unique in the sense that I mentioned before, other vendors who have just said, all right, well, we're going to take something. We're not going to open that big thing or anything. We're going to take something and put it in open source. There are a couple of them that are in the CNCF, but most people who do this sort of security scanning stuff, that's their crown jewels, if you want. Those are not the things they want to make open. We've decided to make this open. And that means we have the opportunity to build something which we want to be relevant and useful to all Kubernetes users. And so we're looking at what we can do here. We've moved a lot into image scanning because that's a thing people assume needs to be done and done well. But because we're an open source project, we can stand on the shoulders of other people who have done this. And so we've used the Gripe scanning engine from Anchor, and we're very happy to work with other people there. Like we did our survey, and it turned out that people either use one commercial product that they're unhappy with because it's an opaque box to them, or they use five or six different open source projects, and the integration of them is a problem. And so that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to say, we will take projects that make sense, we'll integrate them, we'll give you something that makes sense where you can look at your misconfigurations and look at your image results and say, well, hang on, if this was open and had this vulnerability and that misconfiguration happens, you have an attack chain, you have a problem that you didn't have if you only looked at those two things independently. So that's what we're really trying to do with CubeScape at the moment, is find out how we can take other projects, work with other CNCF projects. It's obviously a lot easier to roll up to another project and say, hey, we're also in this together. How can we work together?
Yeah.
And that's really what we're doing, is we're finding ways that we can benefit the whole community and rise the tide for everybody.
So how do you keep up with the backend database, right? Like off vulnerabilities, like that you're checking against, like, is it now CNCF's responsibility and Armu is just a contributor, or who owns that database, right? Because there are always newer vulnerabilities being introduced. How does that process work?
There are a couple of different vendors who build engines that do this. I mentioned that we use an engine called Gripe. And the way that all these vendors collect their databases is that the governmental organizations, normally people like MITRE, which is a sort of a nonprofit organization, but founded by the American military effectively, they have a need to track all this kind of stuff. And they get the reports and they publish this stuff and they put it out in machine readable format. And then projects and people take that and then they convert them into formats that basically say, hey, if you see this file with this particular hash, then you know it's vulnerable at this version. And so there are a few of them out there, but the engines tend to look at all of the open databases, collate them all together and make that available. And that's a good example of the benefit of open source, is that this is something that only has to be built once and then everyone else is able to benefit from it.
Gotcha. And okay, that like kind of that leading me to my next question, right? We spoke about the personas and roles and platform engineers and DevOps admins, but even with the actual tools that are being used, right? We spoke about how you integrate with other CNCF projects and open source projects. But if as a customer, I want to integrate CubeScape or any other security tool, right? As part of my, let's say, internal developer platform, maybe I'm using Backstage. Is that functionality available today in the community? Like, can be CubeScape, can be some other tool. But like, if I'm using tools like Backstage, how can I plug in security so that it's included in every stage?
Yeah, let me
answer that.
Yeah, I can say explicitly, like, we've seen people using Backstage, and we've found that that's something that's relevant. And we did a hackathon internally and built something out. And then we worked with the Spotify team. And there was a talk that Rotem, who's one, a director of engineering, did with a lady from the Spotify team at the most recent KubeCon. And so that is the thing. We want KubeScape to be a participant in this community as much as it builds in other things. Other people will do that. Something else that is interesting, somewhat related to what you said, is that there are commercial security vendors out there who kind of do everything. And some of them have said, all right, well, like, we want to add Kubernetes support to this. And a way they can do that is going and finding the best open source Kubernetes security toolkit and integrating that. Sure. And so there's a security company called JIT who did that recently. They did an evaluation and they found that KubeScape was the right tool for them. And they've built that into what is their commercial paid security platform. Their thing's not in the CNCF. Their thing's not open source. But our license is permissive and people are able to take our thing and build on it, just like we're able to take other people's things and build on it. And that's good. Like, JIT could be seen to be competitive with Armo in some sense. Yeah. They are really going for a broad approach where they're doing a little bit of security for everything. We're taking a very narrow approach where we're going very deep on Kubernetes. And that's what our customers have said to us, is that they appreciate about this, is that we are doing that. But the engine can be valuable, and that's sort of how the cycle of open source continues.
Yeah, same goes for Canonical. Like, and then, you know, using a KubeScape, we are part, like, KubeScape is part of the, you know, marketplace, and any Canonical user can use it. And I think making it available to different platforms, and Backstage is a very good example. And IDPs in general are a big thing. They're becoming more and more of a big thing. You know, I remember when we talked about, you know, Backstage back in the days, and well, it wasn't so long ago, but the discussion was, you know, some of the, I would say, business people, like, were concerned, well, but are we going to take them away from our platform and into, you know, Backstage? And, you know, eventually you need to do what makes sense. And, like, one of the key guidelines for us is, you know, let's meet these people in their current tools and their current processes. Yeah. And if Backstage is the place, definitely let's do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we're getting to the last few questions here, but I do want to give both of you a chance to kind of talk about the future, right? You know, Kubernetes security, there's been a lot happening in the last few years. It's been a focus, a theme for most of the KubeCons, and I think in a lot of organizations. You know, it's an ever-changing field, and DevOps and platform engineering is ever-changing. So what do you see sort of as a next step for, you know, both, you know, just the general topic in security and maybe some of the tools out there? I mean, I know we've talked to a couple of and seen a couple of, you know, AI integrations for troubleshooting Kubernetes. Does this extend to Kubernetes? Like, what does that future look like?
Well, I have to say, you know, you cannot not answer AI is going to impact this field. You know, it's the magnitude of its impact and the technology is for sure, you know, changing the world, and it will impact all levels. And, you know, as a security vendor, as a software vendor, we must evaluate how it will impact. And we are already seeing a few ways in which it can impact and provide value for security. So I think that's one big thing that is definitely coming. Another thing that I think will drive a lot of the future is around more automation. One of the things that, you know, we are seeing today is, you know, we give our customers recommendations as to, you know, how they can fix their environment, how can they further harden their environment based on what we are seeing. And whether AI plays into that or not, what I think is going to be happening more and more is today people see this kind of like feature, they look it, they test it, they see, they want to approve everything, I want to go through it. I think going forward, people will become more and more willing and accepting of automation type of changes to their environment. Today you are, it will break my environment, you know, don't touch it. It's working, don't touch it. And I think as technology gets better and better, that's one of the things that people will get more comfortable with.
Gotcha. In terms of the technology piece as well, I think that everyone's propensity for risk is different, and the amount of their budget that they're willing to spend on it is different in return.
Yeah.
We do a lot of stuff which is easy to sort of stop problems before they get to the production stage. There is also a lot of Kubernetes security that is around examining the environment at production stage and monitoring what's happening and putting eBPF probes on every machine and seeing which files are opened and so on. And that's an area of interest. We think it's something that you should make sure you know how to walk before you start to run. And so we're building that stuff out next. That said, some of it is being introduced now with the work that Shirley mentioned before about vulnerability relevance, is looking at a container when it starts running and seeing whether or not the files that are vulnerable are actually ever touched. It might be that they're never actually loaded, and that you can say that is a lower priority issue to fix than something that is brought into memory straight away. But once you have those agents there, you could start saying, all right, we're going to monitor every piece of network traffic. We're going to monitor every file that's ever accessed. And there are some commercial organizations and where they do that. There's some places where they have antivirus on every desktop, and there's some where they don't. And so I think that ultimately there are choices that people can make. And as servers have become more powerful and computing has become cheaper, it's become easier to say, all right, hey, I don't mind spending a bit more of my budget on that. There are benefits that come about by running sidecars against every workload that you have, but it's going to cost you a certain amount of CPU and RAM to do that. So over time, if we can pack more, if we can do more with those, and the cost basically of compute goes down, then you might see people are more willing to do more security related stuff and see things. And then hopefully you can do that in honeypot environments as well. And you can say, all right, well, I don't necessarily need to run this everywhere. I can just run it on a few nodes and get to the point where it's provided it's an easy thing to run stuff in the kernel or offload it to a hardware accelerator in the servers of the future or so on, so that it's there and you don't need to think about it. And we're all more secure as a baseline.
Makes sense. So we will end the show with where people can find out more and where they could get started. I think a lot of people might be interested in what Armo and CubeScape have to offer. But before we do that, we do have a fun little ChatGPT section where we ask it to come up with a question for either of you, and you can answer it, or you can let
ChatGPT. Or you can take a shot. It.
Yeah. So the question is, imagine you're tasked to produce a Hollywood movie about software development lifecycle with a special focus on DevSecOps. Who would be what would be the plot, and who would be cast as the lead actor to represent each phase?
I mean, my initial answer is it has to be Sandra Bullock.
I'd watch.
Yeah.
Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock, and they will run CubeScape on a bus that is running very, very fast.
Nice.
And you can call it speed.
Front side bus.
I love it.
I've learned not to trust ChatGPT. We had a company week offsite recently where we thought independently, we had two different teams who were tasked with the challenge. We thought, oh, let's both use ChatGPT because why not? It's a fun little joke or so on. But we wrote a press release about the success of the company, and it turned out that it replaced Shirley as CEO on both occasions.
Is it predicting the future? You are going back to your engineering
group. It is hallucinating.
Apparently, in 2027, Gabi Ashkenazi or something like that, who is the CEO of Armo, says something. So we started to, if you know him, we started to a headhunting program.
Nice. I'd like to think Shirley will have retired to an island by that point.
Yeah, ChatGPT can't be trusted. Like, even when you look up steps to do a simple thing, like, I don't know, manipulate something in Jira, it will just make up steps. So it's a fun project, but you can't really trust it.
Well, I did the same. I did like a ChatGPT of who is Shirley Rosen.
Yeah.
It came back, Shirley Rosen is the CEO of Armo, and then it gave me a resume, which I wish I had. So apparently, I was
tick
marks and checkpoint. Like, nice.
I am one of the inventors of Kubernetes, according to at least my checking of ChatGPT. Well, of the three people who like to proclaim themselves as such, and we don't like to say the project has as founders or anything, but one of them was named Craig, and I think that if you were to autocomplete things somehow, I can see how it got confused.
Hey, that's awesome.
That's great. Well, in case you were wondering, ChatGPT says the movie would be called, the plot would be called Code of Conduct, and it would be a thrilling tech drama following the launch of a groundbreaking application while warding off sinister cyber threats. Starring, requirements gathering, Ryan Gosling, design by Natalie Portman, implementation by Rami Malek, and testing with Emma Stone, deployment Chris Hemsworth, maintenance Samuel L. Jackson, and security integral to all phases is Idris Elba. So,
I can see how it made some of those choices, but I'm still thinking that if you said it in the 1990s, it's going to have Sandra Bullock in it somewhere.
Cool.
That was fun. Well, let's leave our listeners with where they can find out more, where they can get started, maybe where they can even find you both.
Yeah, so you know, look me up on LinkedIn. I'm more there than in Twitter. Craig is our Twitter guy. You can.
Charlie's more on his island.
I'm on my island, and of course, armosec.io is where our company is, and CubeScape. Just Google CubeScape, you'll get our GitHub, and we'd love to get your feedback and your thoughts on it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much, both Charlie and Craig, for joining us for this podcast. Right. So this has been a great discussion, and again, I guess at KubeCon in Chicago, if you guys are there in person, we usually do this in-person interviews. It would be good to have you guys, back and just talk about what's new.
Definitely. It's a date.
Thank you so much.
Take care, everybody.
Thanks very much.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Send you. And we're back. Well, I think that was a really great conversation with Craig and Charlie. You know, we've talked about security and with security folks on the show on various different topics. We've done sort of a deep dive. Well, I wouldn't call it a deep dive, a really wide dive.
Yeah.
Security initially. You know, what were your thoughts on that conversation, Robin?
No, I think it was interesting, right? Like, especially talking about those user personas and how instead of selling to the CISOs, it's better to empower the DevOps admins or the DevSecOps admins or whatever you want to call them, the people actually responsible for implementing and integrating security into their product and making sure that they have the tools that they need. Things like CubeScape, which again, I before having them on the podcast, right, I knew that CubeScape was an incubating project with CNCF, but I didn't know the history behind it. So definitely it makes sense as an organization or as a startup, they are focusing more on enabling people rather than, I'm sure they'll figure out a monetization strategy later, but right now they're focused on making sure the applications are secure that run on top of Kubernetes. I also like the fact that vendors, including Armor, right, like they have now started talking about shift down in addition to shift left. Like, so I read an article about this on the Google's blog site where they're like, shift left is expecting developers to learn everything and not every developer can be a full stack engineer. You can't keep telling them to learn about infrastructure and Kubernetes and security. And in addition to like their actual programming languages that they're supposed to use to build their applications. So now why not shift down and organizations should focus on that philosophy. Build these platform teams that are building these platforms and leverage the tech stack completely instead of having to ask the developers to do all of that heavy lifting. Again, I didn't do a great job at explaining it, but I'm sure I'll link the actual blog article from Google Cloud in the show notes. But yeah, I like the shift left and shift down mentality. I don't know where I stand on those yet, but yeah, interesting terms.
Is there a shift diagonal?
The faster way, maybe a hypotenuse.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll make it up. We'll see.
we can be the pioneers for that term. Like.
Yeah, exactly. I think the big takeaway for me is just the focus on being open source first and building on top of that, right?
Yeah.
I think this is something we've seen, obviously, with Kubernetes, you know, with Google and how they're putting, and just the community in general of contributors, you know, giving back to upstream, contributing from companies. And then, you know, there's various distros that are built on top of that. And Armo is kind of taking that same approach to, you know, here's this thing that, you know, we champion and use ourselves. It's proven in our platform for the enterprise. I really like that. You know, you're putting your own kind of stake in the game, so to speak. And I think that's a really powerful statement. It's hard to bridge and do open source well. And I think that's one I think I've seen work really well and excited for the way Armo's doing it as well. And always remember, at the end of the day, you can always hire Elba, the seasoned security expert and DevOps champion.
That's so awesome.
it'll give you some real oomph in your company in that high stakes world of DevSecOps. Next thing we're gonna do is voiceovers for movies.
I know. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, you know, that was a fun show, and I think that brings us to the end of today's episode. I'm Ryan.
I'm Bobbin.
And thanks for joining another episode of Kubernetes Bytes.
Thank you for listening to the Kubernetes Bytes podcast.